We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. The question of the day is, how do you hack the mind of the consumer so you can serve them in the greatest way and profit from it? Jenny Wong, you're going to help us answer that question in a second. You're the CEO and co-founder of Shopping Quizzes, and you're also the author of 7 Ways to Hack the Mind of the Online Shopper. So the question is, how do you hack the mind of the consumer to serve them in the greatest way and profit from it?
Well, the first thing that you have to get clear on is that not all of your consumers are coming to your site for the same reason or thinking the same thing. No matter what you sell, you can kind of apply an 80-20 rule. 80% of your customers are there potentially just to look around, but there's 20% of your customers, roughly, that are there that are really trying to complete a purchase. They actually need something. We call them high-intent shoppers.
Those are the ones we want to capitalize on.
That's right. Okay. So you want to make sure that your e-commerce site isn't just providing window shopping to the low-intent shoppers, but that is really allowing the high-intent shoppers to jump into your funnel and very quickly narrow down what they're looking for.
So you create that environment that basically says, in an elegant way, are you in that 20%? If so, go this direction. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. If you want to scroll through all 200 dresses on this site, that's
already on your site. I don't know what I want, so I can do that.
Yeah, that's already on your site. You're already built for that. But what a lot of sites aren't built for is the shopper that comes and says, you know what, I have a wedding in a week. I have to order this dress today before it's too late for shipping. And I need to do it before my boss walks in or I have to leave for carpool. And so is your site serving those shoppers? You know, can you jump them to a top 3 list?
You go to a website and there's too many options. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. You know, the New York Times had a great article on it. They called it decision fatigue, which is another way of thinking of it. We have a monetary budget when we go shopping online, but we also have a mental budget. And if we spend all of our mental energy looking at choice after choice after choice, we actually run out of steam and leave and don't buy anything at all. That's actually the most common way that online shopping trips end, is with no purchase.
You guys have come up with a way to basically sift through that so that they can avoid information overload and actually go straight to what they're looking for. But how do you do that?
Well, what you want to do is what you would do if the shopper was standing in front of you, right? If you were face-to-face with somebody, you would ask them just a few intelligent questions about what they were looking for.
What are you looking for? And then if they say a dress, then the next question is, well, what type of a dress? And so on and so forth.
That's exactly right. Okay. And so it depends. So the reason we make our widgets custom is because it really depends on the retailer. But if you were looking for a pair of jeans, you know, I would ask you, do you like them to be light-colored or dark-colored? You know, do you like them this way or that way, tight or loose? There are some really basic questions that you can ask the shopper and then serve them a manageable choice set of, let's say, 3 options, where now they are primed not just to browse, but to buy. And so that's one of the really, magical ways that you can hack the mind of your online shopper.
It really seems like common sense. Why are people not doing more of this?
Well, they're taking more of a data-driven approach instead of starting with the actual purchasing machinery, which is the brain. The actual piece of hardware that is deciding to buy is the primal caveman brain. And if you start with that—
The reptilian brain,
that's right? Exactly right, the reptilian brain. And if you start with that as your premise, everyone would wind up designing their sites the way that we design our widgets. But if you start with a database of SKUs, everybody winds up with left side filters that aren't that helpful, or algorithmic product recommendations.
So yours is different than the left side filter, because that's what my question was. I see the left side filter nowadays. Pick the different price points or the different sizes or the different colors or types of suits or things like that. You're saying yours is different than that.
That's right.
Yours is actually asking a question.
That's right. It's based on a human decision-making model, right? So it's based on the way the brain likes to make yes or no decisions.
Yours is just if this, then that logic implemented into the widget?
Well, it's built on cognitive principles like processing fluency. So for example, those left side filters that you use, if you see, a list of like 40 possible boxes of brands that you could check, how cognitively difficult is that for you to even make a decision on the left side filter itself? And you haven't even gotten to the thumbnails of shirts yet, right? So that's one of the things that's really different, is that it's a conversational model. The left side filters don't feel like conversation, but our quizzes do.
Jenny Wong is my guest. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. We're talking about how to hack the mind of your consumer to serve them in the greatest way and be able to profit from it. Jenny Wong is the CEO and co-founder of Shopping Quizzes. You're also the author of seven ways to hack the mind of the online shopper. And so we talked about the paradox of choice.
Yes.
Let's go into the next one. What's the fourth thing that we're, or the second thing that we're going to talk about, which is the fourth chapter in your book?
So micro commitments are okay. very powerful.
What are
way.
Micro commitments?
So micro commitments are the baby steps. I mean, that's the English language for it. Yeah. Baby steps, right? So before somebody gives you a credit card on your website and pays, you know, $50 for a purchase, what is a baby step that you can get them to take that will help smooth the way to that conversion, that ultimate financial transaction that you want them to commit to, right? So micro commitments can take a lot of different forms.
It could just be answering a question. That's a micro commitment.
That's right. I mean, it doesn't have to be a quiz. Like, for example, one of my favorite online beauty sellers allows you to buy a sample for 80 cents. So the first conversion—
A one-click upsell?
That's right. They're trying to sell you an 80-cent sample. But once they've done it, they've shown that they're trustworthy with your credit card. Now they can sell you an $80 package of skincare.
What the heck is the reactance theory?
Well, if micro commitments is baby steps, then reactance theory is what we normally call reverse psychology.
Okay, right? So how do you capitalize on that for hacking the mind of the consumer?
So the way that the human brain works is we don't like freedom being taken away. And so you can use this to grab attention, and you can also use this to complete the sale.
So give me a contextual example.
Yeah, so in terms of grabbing attention, you know, there was a really famous sort of outdoor ad that happened recently where it said, like, don't buy this jacket. Well, you're not used to seeing advertising that says, don't buy this, right? So that immediately
grabs your attention.
Totally. Yeah. And so that's a great way to grab the attention, is to say something that's really unexpected and trigger a reverse psychology. Another thing that you can do is say, like, you have freedom, including to change your mind, right? So liberal return policies are good as well. And then finally, one of the things that you want to be really careful of is labeling. So some people use their quizzes to assign labels like, oh, you're classic, you're trendy, you're preppy, but you need to be careful because that can actually make people rebel against their label. So it's better off to, in that case, you want to not trigger reactance and instead say, just tell me, instead of like what style you are, instead of saying labeling you as eclectic, just tell me if you want leather or fabric on this sofa.
Wow.
And so you avoid that hidden response that people don't realize is working against them as a retailer.
Three amazing tips from Jenny Wong. You're a rock star. I appreciate you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
I had always heard that people say it's really important to have resilience and grit, but I didn't really know what that meant. When I graduated high school, it was less than a positive experience. So I had always been really striving to just get out of Vegas and look beyond schools on the West Coast because I was trying to avoid being anywhere near some of those people. Consistently just kept getting rejection notes. I had started kind of putting all of my hopes and dreams on this one school, which was WashU St. Louis. And I was waiting and I was waiting and I hear back that I got waitlisted. I proceeded to send them an update every single day for the next 2.5 months. And I got a call from the admissions officer and he's like, Amanda, you send me something every day. Where's my, like, hello from Amanda? And I was like, well, you know, I kind of gave up. I've got to be honest. And he laughed. He said, well, today was the day that you got in. I ran into the really unfortunate situation where my family was running out of money. And my mom called me and said, hey, you're going to have to drop out. While I was freaking out, the wheels, if you will, were already in motion. And I got a call from the dean of the business school and said, hey, we have a scholarship for you. What was crazy is that it turns out, as of 2 months ago, the person that originally funded the scholarship actually lives in an apartment across the street from Tech Week headquarters. And I just met them at a coffee shop. And I went up to him and was like, I'm Amanda Signorelli. It is so nice to meet you. I don't think you have a sense of just how important this scholarship was for me. And so it was a really special moment for me, but it was very surreal. And starting to get a little bit more comfortable with the notion of there's a certain amount of control you can have, but there's also a certain amount of ambiguity that you'll never be able to understand. And that's okay.
Business Rockstars.
I measure success not on how much money you have,
But success is how well do you do what it is that you do.
Equals thousands in terms of synergy, and then set a crystal clear direction. And we do that with what we affectionately call our playbook. That's our vision, our mission, our values, our team rules, long-term goals, strategy, all boiling down to execution.
No matter what, we gotta do a good job. You know, like, I think sometimes you got to roll up your sleeves and start from the bottom. I have done dishwashing jobs at a hotel. I have cleaned horse poop when I was a horseback rider.
Inform and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Welcome to Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this is CEO Roundtable, even though our table is far from round. And Jeremy Dicker, our old friend, is here. He's the founding partner of One Wealth Management. And Devin Alexander, a celebrity chef. When did celebrity chefs become famous?
You know what? We like the term rock star now.
Rock star, yeah, I bet.
That's what they say. I would say probably around 10 years ago, the Food Network helped us out with that a little.
Yeah, Emeril, right?
He was definitely one of the initial. Yes. Yeah.
We're going to talk, this is a CEO roundtable. We're going to talk about what it's like being a CEO. What are the, when you started out your business, what are the things that you had to learn most quickly?
Hiring, how to screen people quickly, and then also making sure you have a good lawyer.
Really?
Yes. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but...
No, that's probably the best tip we've had.
You know, a lot of people don't have a lot of money early on, as I didn't. I was, you know, scratting. And so I made a mistake early on that I went and, you know, had a friend who wasn't exactly specializing in some project that I was doing. And then when the deal went awry and they filed bankruptcy on me, it was like, the contract wasn't written very well.
Right.
And I kind of learned a very expensive lesson.
That's a good tip I think a lot of CEOs don't think of, or maybe they do. What do you think?
I think it's incredibly important to have good advisors around you at all times. I think also, you know, if I was to think about the things that are most important as I started our company and before we started the firm, it's try everything that you're passionate about at least once and make sure you've got great advisors around you so that when you do screw it up, they're there to help you put it back together again.
So you admit to screwing up?
Many times, Pat.
Okay. Me too, by the way. So how do you plug in and unplug, right? How do you check out?
You know, I am not the best person in the world at that, so I have to schedule my relaxation, whether
That's
it
right.
be... schedule a trip with a friend because I will be more accountable to the friend than I will. And same thing with working out. Like I schedule tennis matches and things because I know that if I'm like, I'll go to the gym, I'll have this call and that call and I'll get caught up. But if I have an appointment with somebody, then it forces me to keep that appointment with them and not somehow get in this.
Yeah. Do you have to have a routine?
Absolutely.
For a life routine?
I think is absolutely important. I think if you know, it's like what John Wooden said, failure to plan is planning to fail. So I'm up at 5 every morning. I have my workout. I start my day. I try to be in no later than 7:30 or 7:45 in the morning and try to finish by 5:30 and fill in everything in between. But if it's not scheduled, if you're not present and purposeful about the way you live your day, I think you can get away from it.
Yeah, that John Wooden triangle comes back all the
sure
time,
does.
Doesn't it? It's good. Life balance with work, how do you do that?
Well, that's sort of the same question for me. I really do have to schedule that as well. Right. I know that for years, to be honest, I wasn't great at it. Mm-hmm. Like I had so many opportunities that were exciting to me. Like I love what I do so much and I didn't meet a husband young and all of that. So it was just really easy to go, I'll take that project and really throw myself into it because nobody was edging me into not doing.
That's a good idea. How do you guys nurture new partnerships, new clients, new partnerships?
That's a great question. I think you have to listen first and speak later. Hear about what exactly it is that person's purpose is, what they're looking to achieve. And it's less about the business aspect and more about personally who they are. Because if they're great people and if they're willing to listen and they want to develop a strategy with you, then you can work out the rest. It's kind of the same thing with employees. Hire great people and find a place to put them.
Is it hard to say no?
I think it is, but that's the art. The greatest gift you can give anybody is the answer no.
I tell my son, keep saying yes until someday you can say no.
That's right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Is it hard for you to say no to somebody?
Actually, not anymore. My biggest tip would be to over-deliver with new clients. I mean, I don't take something unless I really feel like I'm being compensated fairly, because otherwise I'm going to go into it like that and you're like, oh, I'll make this work. I would much rather take those people who start fair, over-deliver for them, and then I find that the relationships go on forever.
How do you keep your employees passionate? You're passionate, I can tell.
So. I'm very passionate. And actually, every year we create a vision board. Some people might think that's a little like out there. But every December as a group, we literally, like, they contribute, they tell me what their goals are. And so I know that where they want to grow, and I can always keep that back of mind. Yes, there's always tasks that we have to do, and you can't just let them go. But if you know where people are going and what they want, you can really deliver for them and they deliver for you.
When you have an employee that's not working out, how do you do that?
I try to sit down and fix it by really asking them, like, what isn't working for them. I mean, if I put it on me and say, you know, am I not communicating with you properly? Are you, you know, losing interest in the work? Is there another area that you'd like to be doing? Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes
that sounds scary to me.
To ask them that?
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know where they're coming from, you can't. I mean, it goes back to what Jeremy was saying about listening. Like, if you know what their goals are and what they want, I mean, sometimes they're just, you know, in our office, like, people have to do dishes. And if they don't want to do dishes, you know, I'll start taking photos on Friday night of the kitchen and send it to them, email, and be like, this is unacceptable. And they either choose to play or not, but they know without a shadow of a doubt that this is the expectation.
So there's a structure at your office.
Yes.
Doing dishes is part of a structure.
Yes. I mean, there's a checklist every day. I mean, we have to, I actually have my test kitchen above my home. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I never get to go home if they leave it a mess. So there's a whole binder of this is Friday night, this is other night.
Just don't hire messy people.
You'd be surprised. No. We now actually on the application, they have to put in their cover letter, I don't mind doing dishes for certain positions.
Actually, I like doing dishes.
So do I.
And I like ironing and doing dishes.
Well, you're both welcome to come over anytime.
If you feed us, we're fine.
Oh, I'll totally feed you. Are you kidding? I feed everybody who walks through the door.
Do you read comments? Do you have a suggestion box in the old?
No, I think we're very much an open door policy with our people. So what I always tell everyone is you need to listen, assess, and learn. Mm-hmm. Listen, see what's there, assess, and see if there's anything that's really there that makes any sense, and then learn from them.
What about mistakes?
Make them every day. If you're not making mistakes, you're not growing. And I think ultimately—
How do you know it's a mistake?
You're
in the wealth management business.
Yeah, so for us, you know, if we go to invest in a marketing opportunity that exists out there, and we don't get the kind of economic results after 18 months, it didn't work. But we need to learn from the things that don't work so that it's not a total loss and see what things can we change. How can we change the way we delivered the process to maximize the return later on?
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is CEO Roundtable, Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Thanks for joining us.
Career burnouts affect everyone. Follow these short tips to help you stay focused at work and not flame out by the end of the year. I'm Alex Worley with a Business Rockstars Minute. Step one, change your work environment. If you can, try working from a different place. If the weather is nice, find a spot outside, or maybe spend a day working from a coffee shop, maybe a library. Sometimes a simple change in scenery can be refreshing enough to help you recover from burnout. Step two, get an outside opinion. Sometimes you're too deep in your problems to be able to see a way out. An outside influence, whether it's a trusted friend, counselor, or family member, can be instrumental to helping you fashion a healthy plan to move forward. Step three, don't give up. The thing about battling burnout is that everybody is different. What worked for somebody else might not work for you, but the bottom line is don't give up. There is a healthy, manageable, productive life available to you. Just might take some time to find it. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
This
Welcome to the DocuSign Agreement Cloud. Every industry, every organization, every department, everywhere in the world relies on agreements. The DocuSign Agreement Cloud finally allows you to digitally connect, automate, accelerate, and simplify the way you prepare, sign, act, and manage agreements better. We call that being more agreeable. DocuSign Agreement Cloud.
This is Business Rockstars. I'm Brittany Lehman, and my guest today is Leslie Masoner, executive producer of Pure Play Entertainment. Leslie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Give me a little background on you and what Pure Play Entertainment is.
Pure Play Entertainment is a boutique production company. We provide content for streaming services primarily. We do develop our original content, but we have built an agile production company that is trying to fill a niche in the space of entertainment that can deliver high quality content for the prices of the lower streaming service budgets.
And you've kind of seen this space evolve over the years. What has that been like, and how are you kind of staying ahead of the competition?
We're constantly, like I said, pivoting to keep our overhead low, hire like-minded people that have, you know, they love this genre and this content, and we're working with the streaming networks to keep people engaged mm-hmm. in shows, because as you know, between seasons is a long time sometimes, and people will jump ship to a different show.
Right.
And so the networks are now trying to figure out, how do we keep them there? How do we entertain them enough that they're going to be excited to come back for the next season? Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of building out new platforms for that.
A lot of entrepreneurs, people who want to start or grow a business, often don't, because they let that fear of failure get in the way. What advice do you have for those people who are wanting to start a business?
Well, initially, I mean, obviously educate yourself on how to run a business, because mm-hmm. I can't even tell you how many people have approached me and they're like, yeah, we're going to start this business and I've got my buddy and we both make movies and we're this and that. And I'm like, do you know how to run a business?
Right.
Like the nuts and bolts of running a business, and they have no clue.
Right.
So educate yourself on that, and especially finance. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest asset for anyone in this business is learning how to budget mm-hmm. and budget shows, but also budget your business.
Right.
And then network. I mean, you have to network and you have to get out there and do as many things as you can. But you have to do it. It's not just about, like, I have a great idea. Now you've got to package that idea, and you have to budget that idea, and you have to get people interested in that idea. And you have to look for weaknesses in the business that you're going into. Is there a business, if you're looking at the overall landscape of this particular, you know, genre that you're looking at doing, where is there a hole? Where can right. I fill a hole?
Right.
And that's sometimes not easy to find, but it will serve you in the long run. And, you know, everybody you talk to will give you a different piece of advice. So what the main thing is, if you're educated on how to run this business, you can filter through which advice you want to take.
Yeah.
Because that's something that I constantly see, is that people have a great project and then they'll meet with this company and the executives at that company will say, oh, well, it'd be great if you did this.
Right.
So then they constantly are changing, and then they lose sight of the original idea. And sometimes it gets so watered down that it's no good anymore.
So true.
And you have to really believe and love what you're doing, because that's another thing, is because you live with these projects for so long, unless you really have your heart into it, it becomes really, really difficult to get up every day and deal with it.
Yeah. What was the biggest challenge you faced when you started Pure Play Entertainment?
Well, it's just sustaining yourself while your business is growing, and you kind of have to have a balance of, is there another business that I can have a stream of income that can support me while I'm building this business? Because typically in the first couple of years, it's very difficult.
And what's the benefit of having a co-founder? How has that kind of
helped you?
Well, picking a co-founder is really important because you really need to find somebody that complements yourself, that has a different skill set than you. Because a lot of times people will get together that have the same skill set, and then you have to go out and hire everybody else to fill those voids. And we, like in my company, my partner is more of the financial side and he does budgeting. He's a line producer. And I was more of the legal business side, but I'm also a very creative person. And it was really nice that we came together because we were able to complement one another and we don't have to go outside and hire a bunch of people. I can do the legal, he can do the bookkeeping and the, you know, budgeting and all of that.
What advice do you have for entrepreneurs who want to break into the content creation space?
For content creators, it's really understanding the space. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have great ideas for content. They just don't understand how to market those ideas and how to do the hard work of, you know, packaging those ideas. And a lot of them think, oh, I've got to go get an agent. Well, agents won't take you unless you have a track record.
Right.
And a lot of times agents don't see, there's a lot of really great agents, but sometimes they don't see your vision. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to hone your vision, build a really great presentation for your vision, get out and meet as many people as you can, network, get into where managers are that create talent, try to get, you know, talent interested, mm-hmm. even a director or a writer, another writer that a lot of times this is a huge part of it is that I always tell people it's better to have a piece of something that's a success than 100% of nothing.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of my clients, writer clients would come to me and they're like, I don't want to show anybody my script because someone will steal the idea. Okay, well, you can have 100% of that idea, which is never going to go anywhere.
Right.
Or you can go out and show your script around and maybe end up with, you know, 40, 50% and have a huge success. So don't be afraid. Get out there and really market your ideas and yourself, and things happen, you know, and you have to listen to people, mm-hmm. but not always implement everything they tell you.
Right. And where can people learn more about you and your business?
We have a website, pureplayentertainment.com, and I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook. I speak a lot and I travel a lot and I'm in different groups and things. I'm going back right now to NAB in Las Vegas. And I try to get involved and speak to women's groups and different groups all over. You can find me all over. I'm online.
Well, Leslie, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
This is Business Rockstars. That was my amazing guest, Leslie Masoner, executive producer of Pure Play Entertainment.
Back at the end of 2013, I had to muster up the courage to be able to file for divorce from the man that I was with for 12 years. We had two children together, we had a business together. And that business was a very successful business. It was Coloft, the first co-working space in LA, which helped build the entire ecosystem here in LA. That's why they call me the godmother of Silicon Beach. I remember filing in the attorney's office, and they told me the next day he's gonna be served. So that day I wanted to puke. Didn't know how I was gonna go forward with that. He was my business partner and my husband, right? I start getting emails from him. I start getting phone calls. You've been terminated. Your role as co-founder is terminated. And I remember looking at it like, what? He can do that? This is my business. I'm the one who put the money into it. I'm the one that put blood, sweat, and tears into this. It was my baby. And for 3 months, I literally didn't leave the house. I was in the fetal position in my bed. Now, during that moment in time, I encountered, who is now my business partner, an incredible woman named Jasmine. And she saw something in me. She really said, I believe in you, and you need to believe in yourself. So she helped me really understand what I'm capable of. She helped put me back together, kind of like a puzzle, bit by bit. And I realized how powerful I am. and that I create every situation and I create the outcomes.
You definitely need a very strong brand voice. And therefore, you need a fantastic product that is very unique in its category. In order to get that brand voice through, that you find a very fantastic branding agency that will be able to take what you want to say about the brand, about the product, and really take it through onto the package. And therefore, when you are at a trade show, the package immediately gets noticed. The buyer is going to come to your booth because they've noticed your packaging, and then they're going to taste your product. So it's got to taste delicious. The biggest ones are UNFI and KeHE. Those are distributors. So you're looking at who's attending the show, you're looking at name tags, you're targeting them, and you're making sure that they come to your booth and try your product. That means you will have to be in the aisles and say, hey, come see me. Do your research before you go to the show and make sure that you're looking at the show prospectus and figuring out which buyers are going to be there. If you have contacts before you go to the show, make sure you send them an email and tell them where your booth is. It's also probably a good idea to kind of case the show and making sure you know what your competitors are doing. Maybe they're pouring it with almond milk as opposed to non-fat milk. The next thing you want to make sure is if you're going to land national distribution, that you are ready to produce the product.
What people don't understand is how much writers write. For every Breaking Bad script you read, there is 100 Broken Bad scripts that were written. The first thing you have to do is have a lot of material, because one day somebody's gonna ask, and you have to have your best material. People say first get representation. I would say first get read. And when I say get read, I mean have someone else read it. Even if it's your mom, your girlfriend, boyfriend. If it's good enough, then there's, you know, a screen contest you can enter and things like that, and just random people you can send them to, you know, in Hollywood and whatnot, or New York. You have to constantly create content. That's the biggest thing. Constantly create. Create. If you're lucky enough and good enough to become a working screenwriter, you have to realize that you are now in a business. You have to find a way to balance what you think is right to what they think is right. Because again, if they're the ones paying you for lots of pitch fests, like those type of things happen all over college campuses, they happen a lot. And if you're good enough, somebody will hire you to write something. Just because it's not a screenplay doesn't mean it's not writing. Just because it's not a novel doesn't mean it's not reading. Be as creative as you can, because that will lead to somebody seeing it and being passed around. And that's how you wind up selling your work.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Let's check in with Mark Lack.
How do you know if getting a celebrity endorsement is the right move for your business and your brand? Joining us to answer that question is Lindsay Carnett. She's the CEO and president of Marketing Maven. It's a pleasure to have you on the show with us.
Thanks for having me.
So how do we know if it's the right move for our business?
I'll give you a buyer beware. So having a celebrity involved with your business can be a blessing, but it can also be a curse. So you have to determine, one, do you know your target audience? So if you know that you have a viable brand, you have a specific target audience, then and only then can you really determine which celebrity should I even invite to the table? And then how do you present your business well enough to make it interesting for them?
So a lot of the times what I see is a business and a brand that has a product, a service, and an offer that is in alignment with something a celebrity is in alignment with. For example, maybe a celebrity has had cancer or health problems.
Yep.
And a company has the product or the service that provides the solution
Correct.
To the cancer or the health problem. Then there's synergy there and it makes sense. And it doesn't seem like it's a cop-out and a sell-out on Yep. either part.
but there's actually congruency and alignment there. So is something like that, like if you're a business, you have a product and a service, and there's a celebrity out there who's in alignment and is very congruent with the values, the beliefs, and the offer, that would be something that would make sense.
You have to know how to tap into the heartstrings of the celebrity, and it will help you sweeten your deal.
Exactly. Like if they've already gone through the problem, maybe your business was the one that did help them. Who knows? If you're at that level, right? Maybe you,
exactly.
Maybe you're the one that helped that person, and then you could reach out to them. Maybe not. In a lot of cases, that's probably not going to be the situation. Mm-hmm. So let's say that I'm a small business, right? Maybe I'm doing anywhere between $1 million to $5 million or less. Mm-hmm. How would I know? Give us some contextual examples. Maybe you've helped people do this. Just like, I'm a small business.
Sure.
I'm not a big company with a big budget. I'm a small business, and I'm looking to maybe capitalize on leveraging influencers and celebrities.
Sure. So first of all, it's researching where are these people and what other deals do they have on the table. So one example is just, I mean, we have a nonprofit called WaterAid. WaterAid America, it's a huge organization. It's a global organization, and they're looking to align with celebrities that are from different parts of the world. So for example, they just built a whole facility in, they installed toilets. It's all for women's health. So they're looking for a woman of Colombian descent. So
okay.
Sofia Vergara would be a huge fit for them, but we first have to check what other nonprofits they're associated with. A lot of athletes, for example, will have their own foundation, and it's, you know, they have their golf events and everything. So we first have to make sure nothing's conflicting and then go in with the ask. And a lot of times it's having that person experience your brand.
Yeah.
So we did a Norwegian design tour with Ty Pennington, and it was not a formal endorsement by any means, but to have him embrace that culture really made a difference with how the level of interest that he had working with different companies.
So I love that you brought up research, because I think that's the first thing you have to do is you have to research to see maybe they're already doing something with another nonprofit, and it looks a little weird if somebody's supporting all of these nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So I love that you brought up the research part. How do we go about reaching out to them though? So let's say we've done our research. Mm-hmm. Now we found somebody that we think might be a fit, or you have a couple candidates we want to reach out to. What's the best way to do that?
I know that all of the agents and all of the managers will hate me for saying this, but my most success has come from actually reaching out to that person directly.
To the celebrity.
So a lot of times you can't do that though.
Yeah.
So, but if there is some sort of in that you have to go to them directly, if it's something that speaks to them and pulls on their heartstrings, then it's probably not going to pull on the heartstrings of the agent and not going to pull on the heartstrings of the manager, because there's
like
no
their
money
job's
involved.
Like the attorney, it's to say no to everything.
Right, exactly. So you want to try and go as directly as possible. If it's something that you know that you've researched really well, it will help this person emotionally somehow, and and there is that connection.
Fantastic. So you got to get ultimately to them, ideally in the ideal world, and then leverage the emotional side again based on research. So a lot of businesses out there, they may or may not be spending money on marketing, but there's some very key important metrics and numbers to look at when you're getting into the marketing game. What are they?
Lifetime value of the customer and cost to acquire a customer.
Okay, so I'm a business owner. I'm either already spending money on my marketing, or I'm just getting ready. Maybe a lot of my businesses come from word of mouth, and I'm getting clients. I don't necessarily know where they're coming from. I'm a little nervous to start spending my money. You and I both help people, help businesses with consulting, specifically on the areas of sales and marketing. I see people all the time. I go into their business, I'm gonna help them grow, generate more leads, and convert more leads. So first question is, what's your customer acquisition cost? And a lot of people don't know how to answer that. So why is that so important?
Because you need to know when you are spending your money, how to get a new customer into your funnel. And you need to know how much to spend. So basically, we marketing professionals like to back into the numbers and figure out, all right, what are your revenue goals?
Yeah.
How many people do you need to get in your funnel so that you figure out what is your cost per acquisition? So to acquire a new customer means a lot of different things for different companies. It means more if you're a continuity-based business, for example. But, you know,
because then you know the lifetime value, you can project that out.
Exactly. And you can figure out, you might be spending at a loss initially, But if the people are staying on your program for X number of months, it grows. So that's the whole value of...
Like, if you know your lifetime value, for example, to keep it super easy, if we were just going to say, it cost us $20 to acquire a customer.
Right.
But we know that customer in 90 days is worth $100 to us.
Right.
How much, right? Or if we just knew, forget the customer acquisition cost. If we knew the customer was worth $100 in 90 days, how much could we spend to acquire them?
Right. You would want to spend probably 50, not 20.
Depends,
or
right?
You could spend, I mean, insurance companies are paying a huge amount of money per lead to acquire that customer because that customer, the lifetime value is so high.
Yeah.
So it's all relative based on what that lifetime value of that customer is.
Lindsay, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We connect a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.